A very good morning to you and welcome. This is the Mirai Breakfast, of course, where the big conversation begins every morning. And welcome to the last hour of our show. It's 16 minutes past 9 a.m. in the morning. And I'm glad to tell you that our guest is here with us in the studio this morning. And we will be discussing and particularly looking at the work of the... Basically, our discussion will be looking at the work of the Gender-Based Violence Court and how it's been functioning since 2019 when it was first established. Well, for an in-depth discussion on this particular topic, we are glad to be joined in the studio with Barbara Aromo, who is the program manager for the Federation of Female Lawyers, who has worked extensively in this particular area. Good morning, Barbara, and it's good to have you on the Mirai Breakfast Show.
Morning, Sabit. It's amazing to be here.
Great. Let's look at the Gender-Based Violence Court, which has been a welcome addition to the country's justice system. Can you give us a bit of a background on why it was necessary in South Sudan's context to have a court which deals almost exclusively with gender-based violent cases?
Well, the issue of women's rights in South Sudan is not a new thing. It's a thing that has been ongoing. As you know, post-conflict country, and with every conflict, most of the people who suffer are women and children, especially when it comes to sexual violence and gender-based violence or such issues. Mm-hmm. Of abduction for the marriage, issues of cultural inheritance once a widow is a widow. Mm-hmm. Issues of even just underage marriage. So all these things have been culminating, even as well as the conflict-related sexual violence. And with the numbers that were so high, especially even with the increase that happened with COVID, shutting down most of the world and South Sudan not being an exception, mm-hmm. we saw schoolgirls being impregnated, you know, and that is, of course, the newspaper would call it impregnation, but of course, as the law says, that is statutory rape because they are underage people who cannot consent to these things.
Defilement, something
yes,
like that.
Yes, it is defilement, although mm-hmm. We don't have a definition for it in our penal code. It's okay. Just under rape. Mm-hmm. So with the high cases and the constitution mandating, the amended constitution 2011, mandating the president and the judiciary to have, it has mandated to have the authority to have special courts. They felt the need to have a separate court that can exclusively handle the GBV issues, and also it's the juvenile and gender-based court, so it also handles issues of children in conflict with the law together with gender-based issues. Mm-hmm. So that was the reason and how it happened, and we're just excited that we had a president at the time who was open to it. The chief justice approached him, they were able to be given the land. Mm-hmm. that currently the court sits on, and the international partners, UNDP together with the Netherlands in South Sudan, came together in helping revamp the court. Mm-hmm. That we have today.
Great. And is this a unique intervention to South Sudan, or are there other examples around the world on this particular gender-based violent court only?
No. It's not a new phenomenon. Of course, gender-based violence is not exclusive to South Sudan, as I said earlier, and it's not even exclusive to any culture or ethnic community in South Sudan. We have seen gender-based violence happening to women in the West. We've seen it in Asia. We've seen it in Europe even. So it's not exclusive. There are jurisdictions similar to ours in the Commonwealth that have similar courts. And of course, even with our neighbor Kenya, of course, we have the family law court, although it will handle issues that are more civil. Mm-hmm. In nature, and not criminal. Mm-hmm. We have the judges who handle it in the criminal matter, the issues of rape, defilement, and all that. But the other issues were family-related issues of discrimination in a marriage and mm-hmm. The civil aspects of it all, wife inheritance, marital property. We have those ones that exclusively handle these issues. Yes. Especially with our neighboring countries and also across the world.
All right. Let's talk about the gender-based violence itself. Why is reporting cases of gender-based violence such a challenging issue in the South Sudan context?
Wow. And that's such a timely question, because we have been doing this research for quite some time now with some funding from UN Women last year at the Federation of Women Lawyers, and also this year with GIZ in South Sudan. And we've been following up on issues of reporting through our referral pathways. We are working closely with the One Stop Center and the police stations. And what we noticed was, of course, there are cases that were being reported at the One Stop Center. But when you go and look at the police station to try and see if they align, of course, they are heavily underreported. So we've had a lot of community engagements. We've talked to people in the IDP camps in Jebel. And of course, within our networks, we've also we've seen consultations happening in Mangaten. We've had discussions with the university students at Jamajuba. We've had discussions with community leaders, the sultans, the religious leaders, youth leaders, social workers. And we all got this feedback. And the whole question was, why are we not reporting these things?
Yeah.
And of course, the response came, number one culprit is always culture, right?
Mm.
We have a culture of silence and fear. We don't talk about this thing. Ah, it's a shameful thing. So of course, we don't want to bring shame into the family. So let's keep it inside and let's deal with it inside.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, she's sick. Okay, let's deal with it quietly with the hospital. We have a doctor in the family. It's all of them come and treat it internally. The second one, of course, there's that fear of even of authority. We've seen a lot of violence being done by men in uniform, and of course there's that fear of Zolkebirism, and we've seen women going to report, and the first question you're asked is, what were you wearing? You know, show us how they raped you. Dehumanizing questions, you know, that even add more trauma to the victim. Some of them are not, they don't believe you. Some of them believe you deserved it. Why were you outside at 10? You know, why were you far from your home? Why are you working in a hotel? You know, and it goes to extreme levels.
Blaming the victim,
you know, because of course there's some things women are not supposed to be doing in our culture. So of course you deserved what you were doing. You were probably asking for it. And of course, poverty. Many of these cases, we've seen girls being married off because the father didn't have a job during the COVID period. And of course, there's someone who wants a new wife. So we'll take the cows, we'll take the money, you take the girl, and the family will survive. So of course, we don't report it. Oh, you're being beaten in your marriage. No, you have to stay because we cannot return the cows. You know, we don't have the money to return it. So even these things are just the things that keep, you know, the GBV continuing and all that. And I think what's concerning is, what is promising is that we are seeing there's a change and shift in attitude. There's an awareness in it. We've done a lot of awareness campaigns. And when you ask these people, do you know what gender-based violence is? Of course, when you use the big term, it can be a bit confusing. But when you explain what it is, they'll be like, no, we know what that is. We have been living through it.
Yeah.
So they're aware of it, and there's the attitude of changing that is happening.
Great.
So that is the good thing.
Yes, let's go through actually the, you know, reporting case. Once a survivor has taken the brave step for reporting the case, what is your role? I mean, take us through what happens. What are the steps after that?
Usually, you're supposed to go to the police station and get Form 8. Yeah, it's the form where you are supposed to show your injuries and what happened to you, and it's really filled in either by the hospital or the investigating officer, depending on the nature of the offence. And from there, if it was a physical assault or something that was detrimental to your body, you go to the one stop centre, and it's very key that you go to it go to the hospital as soon as possible, because we have this 72 hour rule, in that those first hours are very critical in getting enough evidence to get justice. You know, when we always try and tell our people, when it happens to you, when it happens to your neighbor, the first thing is, don't wash the clothes, put them in a paper bag, or you know, to preserve the evidence, you know, take them to the hospital as soon as possible, let them get checked out quickly, and we can get as much evidence as possible. Then from there, even at the hospital, you get counseling and preparation for it. And once you are of course in a stable enough position, that's where the lawyers come in and guide you through the process. There's at every police station, there's a prosecutor's office, and once you report it, that the file is taken, then they start together with the investigation done by the investigating officer, and they're able now to take it to court. Where FIDA comes in is where we watch brief for the survivors and make sure the case is going well, nothing is being jeopardized, you know, no Zolkebir is trying to come and, you know, cover up, no file is going missing. So and also just to hold that survivor's hand all through that process. It's a very daunting process. It can also take extremely long sometimes.
Yeah.
And it's a very scary process. Sometimes your family chases you because, why are you reporting? Why are you showing our shame? You know, sometimes we don't have even the safe houses to keep these people. We work in our networks, our women-led organization networks, and we have Crown the Woman, who have the safe housing, but it's also short-term, again, funding, you know?
Yeah.
So some of these things are what even deter it, because some of these women go in, they are determined to get the justice, but we are a social community. You cannot be isolated from your family. You don't know where to go. Sometimes we are raised to think badly of other communities. So how do you even now go and live with other people? So you get, or even the pressure they find you, they pressurize you, they pressurize the, you know, the officers and all that, and sometimes the file goes missing. Sometimes mm-hmm. even you get pressure and the victim pulls out and you cannot force them.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not by force.
Yeah.
So when they pull out, you have to let them, you know.
Great.
Yeah.
Now, with all these challenges, of course, that you've been facing, and since the establishment of this court in 2019, how many cases have you tried successfully over the past 3 years? Like, have there been some success stories, really, that you'd like to share with us after the establishment of this court?
We have had numerous success stories, and success is not only just the ending of the case, mm-hmm. but even just seeing the reporting numbers. As you heard, they have registered about 700 cases, and that is an alarming number, because the fact that many people didn't even know this court existed, many people don't even know the referral pathways of what to do in this. So even the fact that they were able to get to that point, that is a success in itself, mm-hmm. you know. And the fact that of the 700, over 100 have been tried in completion. We have done close to 20, if I believe, you know, and we've had several successes. Some of them, even the success, because of the backlog and the challenges of the court, we try and mitigate them even before they get there, to the fact that we had a case where there was a girl who was being forced to get married by the family, and she tried to commit suicide. And one of the social workers within our referral pathways brought her to FIDA, and we were able to, she was arrested actually, by the family took her to the police station, of course, on the she's trying to kill herself and da-da-da. Mm-hmm. And we came in, and of course we explained the situation. It's no one really wants to leave this earth, you know.
Absolutely.
And we explained the situation, and this is the thing, and we managed to get them to sign an affidavit, which is an agreement of leaving this girl to continue her studies, and she will marry when she wanted. And that was the justice that we got,
That's great.
Even before getting to the court. But even in the court, we've had cases where we've had revolutionary cases outside of the traditional rape cases. We had a case of a 16-year-old boy and a 17-year-old girl. And of course, it was a case that by any strict law, you say, oh, the older one is the one who enticed the other one, so the older one goes to jail.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, we had the wisdom of Justice Francis Amoo, and whereupon he implemented the Romeo and Juliet laws, whereupon these are minors, they cannot neither consent or not.
Absolutely.
And of course, youth will be youth and will always experiment. So the Romeo and Juliet laws allowed for them to actually not be held culpable for their actions and as minors, and actually the rule basically is a 4-year difference, of course, with a minor to mitigate those youth who start relationships 17, 18 in school So one of your partners gets to the 18, do you break up because of the law and everything? So it was trying to mitigate that and not to fill our jails with innocent love, you know?
Yeah. So naive love
in other words.
Yeah.
So we've had such, it's a revolutionary really, because that was wisdom in my thinking.
Great.
And of course we've had those cases where we've had zero tolerance to cases. We've had a father who was molesting his child from the age of 11. And we found out when she was 17. We found out because she also got an STI, you know. And through all that case is when we were able to try the father. And aside from the rape, when you're found liable for rape, you're sentenced to 14 years. But he got life because, I mean, this is above all, even incest, you know. This goes even beyond any power imbalance. You had a duty of care to this child.
So, all right, yes, if you just join us, you're listening to the Mirai Breakfast Show, of course, where the big conversation begins every morning. It's 29 minutes past 9, and I'm glad to tell you our guest here in the studio this morning here is Barbara Aromo, who is the program manager for the Federation of Female Lawyers in South Sudan, and we are having a conversation particularly looking at the gender-based violent court here in Juba. Remember, if you have any question or any concern or anything you would like to add to this conversation, don't hesitate. You can share your thought with us by calling us on 091-206-2950 or 0921-902950 and be live this morning here on the Miraya Breakfast Show. Now, Barbara, as we continue this morning, really, what measures need to be put in place to help women survivors of gender-based violence overcome the stigma that is often associated with reporting gender-based violence crimes? Because earlier we talked about okay, it's quite good now that at least people are showing up, people are beginning to report. But also we know there are quite a number of people who are silently suffering in their houses. They know that they're supposed to be reporting this case, but they can't report because of... And as you know, of course, we all know the society we live in a very judgmental society when it comes to issues of holding women in certain perspective and how what you should be persevering as a woman, and of course the shame that they say will bring to the family. How do we break out of this stigma? What measures need to be done to ensure that women can just, you know, easily report these cases to the police stations or to all these places that actually these cases need to be reported to?
I think that's a very good question, because I think the approach we have taken as the Federation of Women Lawyers is, let us put faith into the system, you know? Because very many of these people have seen, okay, fine, we've seen how, as you said, people are shamed. Sometimes the story is twisted in the media. Sometimes it's this. So we have taken we're trying to put the faith back into the system. We have done trainings with the media, as FIDA, and also even shared a training manual on how to do gender-responsive reporting with these issues. And even when you're dealing with your victims, with your survivors, how to practice the no-harm principle and not, you know, to keep them safe and not re-traumatize. And that's one step of it, because once I hear something like this has happened, once I read a news, in the news something has happened to a girl, and it has also happened to me, and I see how she's being treated in the media, that... it affects how I will report.
Absolutely.
Secondly, success stories. It's good to hear these success stories, because just seeing how, okay, she reported and the case went nowhere. She reported and she went back home. She reported. Yeah. Those do more hampering, because why did she report? Because we were unable to keep them safe. We need those measures to keep them safe. Why did she report? She was afraid the police station was far. Oh, so we need to build more stations at the grassroots outside of Juba. The hospital was far, so we need to have more hospitals closer to the grassroots to minimize, you know, the issues. It's all building the institution and building the trust and faith in it. Do we have enough police who are trained in gender sensitivity? Has the police force been gender mainstreamed, you know, to have enough police at the stations? Have they been trained adequately? Do they have those facilities and rooms? Are they compensated? You know, because we keep on talking about how they took money, but... Yeah. How are we mitigating that? Are we compensating them? Are we giving them the housing? Are we keeping them safe to be able to do that job? So it's all putting the faith back into the system. And this is why I love the visit, because when Her Excellency went to she's shown a spotlight on this, because the court has been dealing without electricity, without salaries, but they kept pushing until the bumps were, as any human, you know, they had the delays as expected. Every court in the region has a backlog, but they've kept on pushing. They've had their sex stories. So those are the things we need to keep on highlighting and all that. And even accountability measures. If we have that character who is hiding files, you know, let's have reporting mechanisms and have them dealt with properly, you know. Same thing with the police. Same thing with social workers. Let's have mechanisms of recruitment and placement and everything, and keep even the reporting mechanisms safe for the people.
Great.
Yeah.
All right. Let's just get one text message coming here from Galwag, and he's writing from Upper Nile State, and he's saying these issues will not stop in South Sudan, because I've ever witnessed ministers and very powerful people in the government going for a wedding of a 16-year-old. How can you explain this?
But that is actually some of the issue. If you remember, was it last year when the women-led organizations marched against a person in power who was abusing their spouse? Yeah. And one of the issues we were fighting for, of course we couldn't force her to take her husband to court, but one of the issues we were forcing is, let us have ethics and integrity in our leaders. Let's have, as we're moving towards the constitution making process, let's have a chapter on ethics and integrity. Let's have measures where we can hold these people accountable when you mess up. But currently, right now, it is almost impossible to remove these people in office, you know. You have to go through the parliament, you have to have them deliberate. And, I mean, they are humans. If we remove this one, and even me, I remember I married my wife when she was 16, and even some of the parliamentarians themselves, they remember, even me, I'm being beaten at home, even, you know. abuse is not a class issue. There are women in high offices who are being, so it's a thing where we're all, if we're not affected, we're impacted.
All right.
Yeah.
And you did mention something earlier, of course, about this father who was, you know, raping the daughter for all these years. Now, recently, there were reports of an increase in the rate of incest sexual assaults committed by fathers to their children. What are some of these social drives of such behaviors, and how do we avoid them?
If you listen to Mama Rebecca's speech yesterday, she, as she says it many times, we are a very traumatized nation. You know, I don't think many of us are mentally well, and we need that mental health and healing process. Again, poverty, the issue of we are currently discussing issues of family bill, and culturally, most of our cultures, when you divorce a man and it's you who's divorcing the man, the children stay with him, as of whereupon most of the jurisdictions require the child to stay with the mother for that obvious protection, especially if they're girls. I believe in Kenya, when you're a boy, can a father can take custody at, of a boy at 11 and a girl at 15 for obvious reasons. And of course, those are part of the issues. Women know what the harms that can happen to their girls in different settings and all that, but of course, what do you do? You either leave and die, or you stay and, you know, and die.
Unfortunately.
So it's a two-edged sword. So that's why we need some of these laws coming in, the family law bill, that can empower women to be able to live safely with their children and still survive, and also be able to hold, you know, hold these men accountable for these issues. So I think we need to sit down and really revisit our culture, and if truly there are best practices critically currently right now, as the world is right now, and maybe not in those times when those cultures were set.
All right. Now we can take your calls. Remember, you can call us on 091-206-2950 or 0921-902950 and talk to Barbara here with us in the studio. Any question, comment to the conversation, please don't hesitate. Good morning.
Good morning, William.
Yes, welcome.
It's a quest.
Marhabek, munumai dari minwai. Munumai?
Manu George.
Yes, Manu George, wasil gedam to alim amusara kabitak.
Salam yang dikokot di video rumah, di video salam lo ketit, taban kalam ko sidit. Yani, zi kalam mama gam golo, kolo jino mung basma. So, ligina sebe duwili am, yal bitana, bazi am mama basma kalam, nao skubada sebe duwili am. Se banat na suhar, se sebab muhaz suhar, sebe obnegas, zuma kan omda bitana, and another kuwan kala mo jeba kan ajara bana ku kam yo min ku ba gano mo gi logo bana do o musa de fit be da hal al mahkam to kef yani asudi lam de wai ne ne bana bitana kolo madar kul bal do mo ne madar wala na mara kul bal le madar cases de ba kana ajar bita kul bana bitana de yal bitana bitan yani ayo sa sidit yani om yal bita inde bus mo kalam ke bas ye gan ne do ada ba so ita no ma tera bita mo ka ko om dari am mo ni mo ni de al na no ko lom be ore ya bita ba tere ge re yal bita ne karabo wala ku go anen ko to se ke ze ga gan ke lom ko ma 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 ga ke lom ko go da yani se chokol be om ba mo lu da ata de case wala de ke ma kam to ko ke na ab yam la ja ge be yal bita ala ge de om da bita na yana man ta ko ji de mala da bishwar ko la fare wi da al kaji bidoda allahu ma raid wala da o ma ron
kalas ke sukran kalis manu george ma musara ka bitak fi barnama kena tamira breakfast show lisa indak fursa kama na santa buonis manna ragam jason af mahalo sifu tisa white in insa sifu sita it nin tisa kamsa sifir babra manu george from wow is actually talking. Basically what he is trying to say is that the young generation these days don't want to listen to advice. And he's saying especially girls, and that's what he mentioned. So he's asking, like, how do we raise these people so they can be able to also do the right thing and just not misbehave and putting themselves in a harm's way? If I understand him very well, of course, that's what he wants to get from you.
I remember we were always raised and we were told a child will listen to, will hear what you say, but they will do what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And lead by example. We talk about how girls are being spoiled and all that, but when you look at the family setting, when there is no irresponsible alignment of it all, when you keep bringing, adding members to your family in forms mm-hmm. of wives, when you cannot take care of them, and when you have, when you're not even a hands-on parent yourself, mm-hmm. you know, when you leave the raising of children to schools mm-hmm. and the community, when you're not, and women, the community is here when the girl gets pregnant, the mother is beaten, as mm-hmm. if the father was not parenting also. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a double, it's a joint custody thing, you know, and parenting takes 50-50. While we talk about being present, a mother can talk to her daughter as a woman and tell her the ills and problems and all that, but it might even be stronger from a father advising a daughter, and vice versa from boys and moms. It's the honesty and openness to it, because I feel we are in the age of technology. If you don't teach your child, they are a screen away.
The world will teach them.
They are a screen away, literally, mm-hmm. with the TikToks and the YouTubes and the yes. internet. They are literally going to turn on and they will be taught. So we actually have to actually be hands-on parents. That the era of lazy parenting and community and everything is gone, because even the community, the monsters are in the community, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And the community is busy themselves doing
exactly.
their things. All right, let's get talking this morning here. Our lines are still open. Miraya, good morning.
Good morning, Kevin William.
Welcome. Your name, please, and where are you calling from?
Yes, I'm Mr. Yadevi Deng, calling from Banting.
Yes, welcome. It's good to have you in the program, please.
Yeah, it is very interesting topic.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know what to say, because actually we are being forced in such a disaster. I have to call mm-hmm. it disaster.
Mm-hmm.
Because even when we discuss, we've been calling, we've been talking, but no solution.
Mm-hmm.
And ladies and women are being raped day by day.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a heartbreaking, you know. Me, I never call, but I always listen to Mirai FM.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it is a work of quality, together.
Mm.
Your work, my work, to stop that disaster.
It's a collective responsibility.
So,
yes.
Yeah, collective responsibility.
Mm.
So even when we talk now, a lady can be raped and he has nowhere to run. I can be willing to help, but myself, I'm also in the risk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we, the South Sudanese, we should learn from outside countries. So my message to whoever listening, so we have to love our girls, our sisters, our wives, and we have to think how to stop this crisis in South Sudan.
Mm.
Thank you. So
that's
you,
my message.
All right, thank you. Thank you so much for your message this morning here on the Mirai Breakfast Show. And yes, Barbara, you would like to add something on what he said?
I think he said he made it sound like it's a bleak thing, but I think I choose to look at the positives. And even him being a man, being aware of the wrongs of it, he is part of the solution. And even with part of our campaigns, we try to involve men a lot. We've seen a lot of he for she campaigns.
Mm-hmm.
We've tried to do a lot of involvement with the men community. We've even put safe spaces for men to try and talk, and we resolve what gets us to this point. So we have to look at it from a point of, it's not a sole responsibility for women. We cannot mm-hmm. leave anyone behind in this thing. And as the ambassador to Netherlands said yesterday, and he's a teacher, but mm-hmm. he said, we have to start them young.
Mm-hmm.
We have to start teaching those values early, because this GBV cannot, it does not reflect a healthy society with healthy values at the core.
Mm-hmm.
And when you talk, when you listen to the struggle wars, and through this consultation, I've had the privilege to hear people who've been in the front line all through the struggle, through the CPA, through what. And they'll tell you how there's zero tolerance for gender-based violence. You rape, you get the firing squad.
Yeah.
You know, you steal a chicken. It's the same thing. There's zero tolerance for crime and all that. And I feel that we need to not only take this matter seriously and give it the supremacy that it is, but also go back to that era of doing the things that are right and actually holding each other accountable. You know, see your neighbor, report it. It will help in the long run, you know. Yeah.
All right, let's take more calls. If you just join us, you're listening to the Miraya Breakfast Show, of course, where the big conversation begins every morning. My name is Sebid William, and my guest this morning here in the studio is Barbara Aromo. She is the project manager of manager for the Federation for Female Lawyers in South Sudan. We're discussing about sexual gender-based violence or gender-based violence, and looking particularly at the court that has been established to help address some of these issues. And yes, you can call us and ask us on any question related to the conversation. Our lines are open. Miraya, good morning. Hello, good morning.
Yes, good morning.
Welcome. Your name and where you calling from?
You're connected to Lago.
Lago.
Yes.
Ladu or Lagu?
Loku.
Loku. Okay, Loku. Where you calling from, Loku?
I'm calling from Juba.
From Juba here. Welcome. It's good to have you. Please go ahead with your comment or question.
Yes, you know, I've been following you guys speak in the studio.
Mm.
And for those who ring to you, let me inform you, mm-hmm. on this earth, on this world, where there is war in the country, anything can happen. Any incident can happen,
mm-hmm.
because there is no insecurity.
Mm-hmm.
So during insecurity, any crime can happen. What people need, first of all, we need peace in this country.
Yes.
We need permanent peace in this country, in Southern Sudan. You mm-hmm. know, without peace, this thing cannot be stopped completely. We need peace. That's all.
All right. Thank you. Thank you so much for your contribution, of course, to the program here. And yes, Barbara, to what extent has the conflict and the war in the country contributed especially to gender-based violence?
It has contributed a lot. Of course, as I mentioned earlier, with every conflict, it's women and children who suffer the most. And of course, it was the case of Demba in DRC that first recognized rape as a weapon of war. We have a culture where we see women as property and they're owned by the community, and of course the rape comes in and makes women dirty, and the child born out of this conflict. We keep talking about Toronto. Many of mm-hmm. these kids are children born out of conflict related sexual violence.
Yeah.
And then we have cultures that give these children the names that remind them of how they came about. You keep reminding this child of these issues, and of course, coupled with poverty, coupled with the issues and hardships at home, you'll find them going and making their families in the streets,
mm-hmm.
you know? And even our reaction to that is not even a reaction from a point of care. It's, of course, niggas. Even listen to how we keep pushing the names, the Toronto and the what. But these are our children, you know? From the scars alone, from the women, from the children that are left alone, from the distrust. And we had a campaign with one of our donors where we went to Bidibidi camp, and we were trying to see the Madi community there, if the repatriation process, starting to see them come back. And mm-hmm. that was even shortly after the attack on the centenary.
Mm-hmm.
And these people don't want to come back, and with good reason. With what they went through, it was hell on earth. And you see nothing is changing. You still hear the unknown gunman. You still mm-hmm. see, you still hear of Tombra. You still hear of Magui. You still see Lair, Koch.
Yeah.
All these things are happening. So even when you're trying to heal,
mm-hmm.
they take us back. we know the culprits. We are not holding people accountable. We are not seeing justice. And you cannot have peace without accountability Indeed. Or justice.
Great. All right. It's coming up to just 9 minutes to the top of the hour. We can still have 2 to 3 callers. Please don't hesitate to call us and share your thought with us. You can as well send us a text message. And our text message line is 091-2177-141. Let's take another caller. Miraya, good morning. Your name, please, and where are you calling from?
Good morning, Savid William and Barbara.
Morning.
How are you doing?
I'm fine.
Welcome.
You are speaking to Angelina Adele calling from Rumbe.
Angelina, it's good to have you from Rumbe. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Actually, gender-based violence is the most, which has a percentage in South Sudan. It's almost 99%. If I'm to really understand how people talk of having peace and security, insecurity that generate more gender-based violence. We have been into war long time ago, but there were no more crimes like committing, just raping somebody. It has never been there. So if I'm to ask the people and even myself, what went wrong? Because all those days in our liberations, the struggle, we move. We have that kind of unity and love. But at some point, the love and the unity that we are having got lost. That's why people have to practice something which are not really good. Okay, if it comes to, you know, having your children, our parents long time ago didn't have more resources like what we have today. So the only thing is, what I've seen is marrying many wives without the control that you can even take care of these wives and also take care of the children. That's why you can see many children on the street. If one can marry one, or even two, if the culture says, you marry two, the one that you can control, you know? Instead of just leaving these children to go like the way you said before, we have given them so many names, not only the Toronto, but there are so many names being given to them. So they will be like, they are being praised. They are being praised. So all the community need to wake up, and we as women, we cannot just stop keeping quiet. We have to talk and talk. Many people have been saying that, why do women shout? We have to shout because it is our right as women to be to be valued. It is our right to be respected in this community.
Thank you.
So going back to you, my sister, you know, there are a lot of things that need to be done. Coming to the rural areas, there is a lot that need to be done. How can you people extend? Because having this kind of awareness and a lot of advocacy that you are doing in Juba or even at the national level wouldn't help unless we extend to the grassroots, you know?
Yeah.
At least to help these women create some awareness, knowing their right. Because it is not easy for a person to control herself when she doesn't know her even right, the right that can protect her and the right that she can step out and say, this is not true.
It's true.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Angelina Adele, for talking to us this morning here on the Miraya Breakfast Show. And yes, Barbara, how will you respond to Angelina?
Actually, this is something that has actually been noticed, and we have discussed amongst ourselves as civil society, not only in Juba, but across South Sudan, whenever we meet at these conferences and workshops that we meet at. And as I've mentioned earlier, let me mention now, like national civil societies, especially after the COVID break and disruption, we were already underfunded. So you can imagine how much less money like most NGOs have currently. And the good thing is that we have managed to think smart, and we have managed to build networks around us. So we have, personally, with Federation of Women Lawyers, we have worked not only in Juba, but we have worked in Turit also through the help of the church. We have built networks, and we have helped, and also in Bor in Jonglei. But outside of that, we have our other women-led organizations who are within our network, the SIHA network. We have a women-led organization hosted by CARE. We have various women-led organizations, and even human rights activist groups that come together and discuss. Those of us who are not in Juba, they're on the ground. So even when it comes to finding out this information, that what's happening on the ground, we are very quick to mobilize and get that information back. Mm-hmm. We have been noticing concern, especially with the attacks happening, especially with the land, with the land use conflict between the farmers and the cattle keepers, and even the issue with the lair. And we came together and even met with RGMEC. We sat down with them. They were very open. We were honestly asking, your work is to evaluate. Mm-hmm. How are you evaluating this women, peace and security issue that's happening in South Sudan? Because we are not seeing mm-hmm. these things. And we are having this discussion. We are aiming to meet even with their monitoring teams, the city SAMs, on the grassroots, and actually see how better we can deal with it. We are trying to get in even funds that can build the capacity, the monitoring and evaluation capacity of the NGOs on the ground, so that they can also be able to mm-hmm. have timely reports of what's happening on the ground that is even unbiased. Because even us, when we go and tell RGMEC, oh, they are killing people somewhere, mm-hmm. you know, they'll tell us we cannot work on hearsay. Yeah. We need serious reports.
Yeah.
And that's what we want to build, the capacity of the people on the ground. We who have done the legal work here in South Sudan, we help out with sending the resources to the sharing the resources and capacity building amongst ourselves. And we are hopefully, as a program manager, the number of meetings I have with a lot of these embassies and all, we are heavily looking for these funds.
Right.
And as soon as we can, we actually coming to the grassroots as soon as possible.
Great. Barbara, that's the time we have. Thank you so much for coming to Miraya Studios. Just any final remarks or message out there?
I'd like to reiterate, I'm glad that we understand the issue that GBV is in South Sudan. We're alive to this fact, and I like that we know that it's wrong. And I would like to emphasize, it's not just a women issue. The gender means men and women. So mm-hmm. as we also encourage women to report, we want men to talk. Don't suffer in silence. Men are killing themselves. The rate of suicide in the past 3 years has increased incredibly. And we need these men to sit down. If it's an issue of having those safe spaces, we have mentioned, we at FIDAN, within our networks, we have those community forums with the sultans. And we want to have those safe spaces for men to talk, and we can try and tackle this thing together.
All right. Barbara, thank you so much for coming to Miraya Studios. We do appreciate your time.
Thank you so much, Sir.
All right. And with that, we come to the end of the Miraya Breakfast Show this Wednesday morning. Thank you so much for being part of the show, and of course, for contributing to the program. But above all, thank you for your company. Catch me tomorrow, same time, same program, same radio station. I've been with you, Sebit William. Bye-bye for now. And the news is coming to you at the top of the hour.